Welcome to the Empowering Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Kimball Lewis. Our website is empoweringparents.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter and find all of our parenting content, including the Total Transformation Program, which is the number one child behavior program of all time. The Total Transformation Program was developed by child behavior expert James Lehman and is a practical step-by-step guide that provides solutions to the most difficult child behavior problems. You can sign up and begin the program today at empoweringparents.com. Our email address is mail at empoweringparents.com. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, welcome parents to the Empowering Parents Podcast. Today is totally different from what I normally do, which, as you know, if you're a listener of this podcast, I usually just read an article or go through an article that's on our site. I'm more often a guest on the podcast, so I'm usually on the other side of the microphone, but I'd like to have a podcast for our parents who like to consume our content without having to go to the website and read the articles and stuff. So that's sort of the purpose so far. But this week's different. I had someone reach out to me, Maria Gilmore, and she wanted to be a guest on my podcast. And I said, I don't have guests on my podcast. All I do is go through articles, and it's a very humble podcast. I don't pretend to be a podcast host. So, but we traded emails back and forth, and Maria had an interesting background. And in general, the reason I want to bring her on is parents who are struggling with behavior and other problems, which are basically the audience of this podcast. Their problems are really hard. Parenting's hard. These issues are hard, but there's a lot of resources out there. And we've been around. Empowering Parents and the Total Transformation Program and the James Lehman approach has been around since the late 2000s, back when this was all radio and television advertising. That's how you found us, and you'd buy books and DVDs and all that stuff. And back then there were like one or two games in town. That's it. Now with the proliferation of podcasting and books and everything else, parents have a ton of options. Now, it was nice when we were the only game in town, because that was good for the company. But I wasn't with the company back then. So as someone who's doing this work and chose to leave my previous life to do this type of work, this offers parents lots of options. So I'm delighted to have Maria on, so that parents can hear about another option for dealing with parenting issues and other stuff. There's just a whole bunch of resources out there. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Maria Gilmore. I'm going to let you do a longer introduction. I'm just going to read, I think, what you wrote to me, which is, Maria Gilmore is a clinician with expertise in parent education, autism, and behavior disorders. She recently published a book called 7 Superpowers: How Parents Can Shift from Punishment and Control to Comfort and Success. And Maria, so why don't you first of all, welcome. And then why don't you take it over and give us a longer introduction about who you are, where you came from, and what you're doing.
Thanks, Kimball. Well, I really appreciate you having me on today and having this conversation. So I started in the field in 1998, working specifically with kids with autism. And this is kind of at the, I'd say at this time I was going into college, getting my degree, and practicing behavior modification. I think that's what the term was back then. And I don't want to get stuck on definitions and terms, but I do think that definitions are important for people to understand. So I will talk about some terms, but I went to school for a functional analysis track. This is under the applied behavior analysis methodology. And I think that a lot of families have had different experiences with this method. This is really a basic behavior science. And really positive behavior support was what I was drawn to, is that positive environment. I was in programs in grad school where there was, other practices or actually the punishing side of things, that having an aversive, public posting if somebody did something bad and those things, which it didn't feel right. And I had really good connection with my students. And so as I continued to pursue my degree, I got my PhD in special education, and I was a school teacher, and I've taught college for many years. And I shifted from that about 5 years ago and really did full-time practice in the field as a behavior analyst. And we focus on working with parents and building capacity within the homes. So our goal is to
What does that mean, building capacity in the homes?
Sorry,
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm going to interrupt you.
Please do.
Okay. All right.
That is really working ourselves out of a job. I know people say that, but it truly is. I mean, our goal is to graduate our families so they have the tools to be able to handle the behaviors, whatever comes their way, and help their child and their adult child, whatever age, advocate for themselves, getting the type of change and positive quality of life that they want to have. And that's what it's all about. And so that's what I've had my business for about almost 10 years. And I'm also the chief clinical officer of a company called Gemini Systems, where we use video modeling for communication and language skills. And so we have a very systematic way that we do things, but we're also, we're empathetic listeners. Mm-hmm. We communicate with our children, with our clients, with our families. And that's really, really important to me. And so, yeah, I guess that's kind of I got into more of my philosophy, you know, behind this is keeping things positive and really focusing on the person that you're working with and what their needs are and what their desires are in life.
And that led to the book. So you just published this book.
I did about.
Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah. So Seven Superpowers is just a quick guide for parents to see what those skills that they really already have. And that what makes us kind of thrive as humans, having structure in place, not structure to the point where I'm telling you what to do, you know, throughout the day, but just a little bit of structure to give, you know, that comfort. I mean, kids really want that. And so I really take kind of a lighter approach with stories of my own upbringing, because I had a very strict Catholic upbringing, very, very conservative, strict, very structured. Mm-hmm. But, and I don't talk anything about like the challenges that my parents had and I had. I talk about the positive things that came out of this environment that I grew up in. And now as a professional in the field, how I saw why I acted the way I did as a kid. And I was a difficult teenager.
Were you a good kid? I was going to say you're a good kid.
I was a sweet kid. I wanted to please others and everything. But then I teenager, I was into boys. I was like super social, and it was all about me, which I think is pretty typical. But I kind of look back and like, oh my gosh, my parents like didn't budge, you know, I was complaining about things. And I thought that's so powerful, you know?
So are you looking back positively on how your parents handled this or negative? Oh, okay. That's good. I wasn't sure where that was going. It's like, I grew up in this really structured household. It was too much. And then like,
no, it was this. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Italian, Irish, Polish household, constant noise. And I look back at it now, like it must have looked so messy,
It's funny you say that though, because like no one talks about like a teacher they had that was, oh, they were the best teacher I ever had. She was so easy. No, it's always like they were like, they challenged you, right? So it was always like, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the cool parents growing up usually were like it was cool at the time, but then when you look back, you're like, man, that like, why are they letting their kids, like, why are they throwing parties for their kids and just like buying alcohol for them? Like that's. Yeah.
Why are they letting them stay up till 2 a.m. when that's a fundamental need to get sleep, your health and and that was, you know, so I
look that's interesting
positively, but I do want to say there were times that I struggled and my parents argued and they were reactive to me. And, you know, there were all those things happening too. I didn't focus on that in the book because I wanted to, you know, carry forward those positive messages and what works rather than what doesn't work. But I think it's important to talk about that stuff too.
Do you think they were intentional about it? Like they did it intentionally, or this is just how they thought parenting worked and they were brought up that way. They just do it that way sort of culturally, or were they, did they think through like, what's the best way to deal with this?
You know, I do. I think that my parents modeled for us. And again, I wanted this to come across. Everything is so rosy and golden. You know, there were arguments. There were hard times that my parents are still married. They're in their 80s. They're wonderful. I mean, I look back and there are, you know, disagreements, major disagreements that we've had, you know, and all of that. But They were always on the same page, my parents. Like, it's like you could never, you know, I talk about my dad was, he's a jokester. He's in the fun zone, kind of a natural comedian, always made us laugh. My mom was really kind of, you know, very strict, but she didn't follow traditional parenting books or anything. She was a kindergarten teacher. So she kind of used those methods, but, it was really interesting because I remember one specific time when we were on a trip and I was very difficult. I was 6 years old. I did not want to do this writing task. And my mom just sat and pointed and just continued to. And I remember thinking like, I'm going to get out of this because I'm not doing this. I don't want to do this. And she just continued and in a loving way, you know, and how like, I wonder if she talked with my dad, like Maria's going to lose it. just keep going forward and don't even worry. I'm going to continue. I don't know if they had that level of communication. Mm-hmm. In fact, I asked them recently, like, why did you guys send me to an all girls Catholic school? When my older sister went to the public school, I wanted to be just like her, but they sent me there thinking maybe I needed a little more structure or, you know, I needed to be with strict nuns. I don't know. But, they said, you know, we just thought that it was a better situation for you. And I guess we had some friends we spoke with who had gone to this, you know, local all boys school. And they said, this is the future they were. And they had that conversation, but they said it was kind of an organic thing. They just said, this is going to happen for you. But I pushed back. I did not want to go to that school. And then I just fell into it. And then I ended up loving it, actually. But those situations I do reflect on. I think that my parents have just always been really good at being on board with each other, you know?
Yeah. You know, we've been, I've talked to some parents in the past and we've been, I want to say the word accused that, that the James Lehman approach and total transformation is accused of a tough love program, but it's not really, it's more like there has to be an authority in the household and someone has to make the rules and someone has to set limits and it can either be the child or the parent. And we advocate that it's probably better for the parent. Not everyone agrees with us.
Probably better for the one who can help create the environment to have the child thrive. There has to be someone to set that up. You can't just, there was a cartoon about this where, you know, the parents leave and the kids just run the town and they're eating candy all day and they're staying up. I mean, like that is just, you have to, that's what a parent is, right?
And some kids actually, and we point this out to parents who have a lot of guilt about their behavior trials with their parents, with their kids. And we point out that there's a lot of kids that put into the environment that you're talking about that end up perfectly fine. And they would have been fine no matter what. They could have had the worst parents in the world. They're going to end up fine. They just, they were just born like they just, but some kids are hard. Like they're just born hard. And you know it when they're 2 years old, that they're going to be a hard one.
Right.
And it's not the parent's fault. Like the parent, you know, you have a difficult child. You actually have to parent. Well, I don't know. We believe that you have to actually parent those kids differently. They require a different level of whatever. I guess that's what.
So my, I should let you know, my practice is I work with severe behaviors. So, lots of self-injury, lots of property destruction, elopement. We work with authorities all.
Elopement?
Running out of the house into the street and just running away.
Getting married. That's not, I don't know the term elopement. Does that mean, I thought that meant running
off
getting
married. Don't intervene on that.
No. It's called elopement? I've never heard that term before.
Elopement is the term in the behavioral world. So those behaviors, very severe, so we obviously have our systematic methods still, you know, always applied and we do our analysis. But I just wanted to let you know that is what I do professionally, but I also just, I am a step parent. I have two teenagers. And so I get that side and also just understanding where parents are coming from. And absolutely the parents need the tools. And those parents that you got to model a little bit more, maybe for one kid. Like I have one kid who will pick something up watching my every move and can anticipate what is coming next, where the other kid I have to repeatedly show or model and really, so that you're absolutely right. Yeah. Those kids might need more or a different level of support modeling.
Yeah. We have a saying that you need to parent the kid you have, not the kid you wish you had. Because they don't always turn out and come the way you expect them to when they have their own thing. So actually, I'm glad you talked about that you're dealing with a lot of severe stuff. Because that's probably our audience. Like people don't come, our audience is generally parents that are dealing with pretty tough stuff. I mean, it runs the gamut, but a lot of property destruction, a lot of parents are scared of their kids, like actually physically scared. You know, some of the programs we work with are having a safety plan in place for when your 14-year-old who's 6 feet tall and 200 pounds starts going, acting out. Like that's actually a danger to the family and to the parents. So it's elevated. So tell me a little more about the sort of severe problems that you deal with. So,
well, I mean, it really varies. So we work with, right now we have teenagers and adults primarily on our caseload, because we do graduate. That is our goal, is to, build capacity intensively, educate. Mm-hmm. And then if they need more support, we might triage them, but we might stay with them for a few more years, depending, and reduce the level of service. So we start out, we do a comprehensive assessment, a functional behavior assessment, and then we start our goal, our master treatment plan. And then the parents are integral. We get a lot of referrals where I explain our program requires 100% participation. The parent just, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And so that's okay. We understand they need help in home with, working on skills, and they need a break. I get that. But what we provide is that level of education, and we collect data. We have families report out what's going on. We watch videos, and then we do the analysis. And
do you actually video the family, the actual family, or are you watching videos of like role play stuff? Oh, the actual family.
No, they take videos.
Oh, they do. Okay. Oh, they take videos.
Telehealth. Okay. Yeah. So if we're not in the home, typically if we're not seeing behaviors while we're there, but if we're seeing behaviors while there, we collect video data.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, so that's great. So anyone, you work with customers nationwide?
All
worldwide?
Over
all over the world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where are you?
I'm in Vancouver, Washington, the other Vancouver, the one you're born in Oregon.
Okay. I've been to Vancouver, Washington, actually.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So you have, that's actually the part of that, what I was saying before about how there's so many choices now about seeking parenting help and resources out there. And for parents listening, I'm so glad people listen to these podcasts, because this is where you get ideas and information, plant seeds for how to effectively make changes. But you can talk to people anywhere now. Mm-hmm. There's something being in person face to face, but our experience has been that online stuff can work really, really well. And I've worked with online businesses for 10 years now, and have very, very, very close friends that I've collaborated with over the years that I've only met in person a couple of times, but you spend a long time with them it actually worked. The medium works. So
it does. And we've seen since 2020, when the pandemic hit and everybody shut down and went to telehealth, that some of our patients, they responded better. They actually wanted to just have this 2D method, which, you still need to work on the generalization and be in the community and all that. And we're doing that now. But we did see a really, really good response with telehealth. It does require a lot of video for us.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a technical work to get it set up, but once you set up, it works pretty well. So we had some questions that we were going to talk about. So one of them is, and you can comment on this, how do you see parents following their child's lead, especially at times of big development growth, such as the adolescent years? So what do you mean? So what'd you mean by that question, and elaborate on that?
Yeah. It's like one day your kid is 12 and then they're 13, and it's like the night and day, different people. The hormones start, their behaviors change. Same thing from the toddler years going, they're growing up, their interest changes. And I'm just seeing with all the different, the access now to these different social media outlets and everything, and video games, and then, you know, sports and all of the opportunities that kids have, but now a lot on screen, that the interest can shift really quickly. And they're kind of following their peers. And I think that how do you follow your child's motivation if they have shifting interests? And so I think it's all about, and I believe we had talked about this before, or I saw something on a previous article from your company that is talking about communication. That is so important, that you talk with your children and you connect with them at all ages. And when they get to be teenagers, they might not want to do that as much. They kind of pull back. They want to be in their world with their friends, or they might have depression, or, you know, some stuff might be coming up for them. And you got to talk with your kids. You got to know what's going on. So I think that's how I mean, it's kind of a simple thing, but some parents really just want to avoid kind of going there. But the number of questions we ask our kids it's a lot. I want to know exactly what happens at school, and, you know, but in a way that I'm still continuing to build that relationship. So they're not like, just like, stop talking to me, you know? But I think that's really important in order to see where your child, your teenager, your adult kid.
And do you think, why do you think parents aren't talking to their kids? Or at least the ones that you work with, like why would we have to even tell parents that?
I don't want to just blame, you know, screens, but I do think that parents get tied into the screen. It's just an observation that I've had and collected data on it. So I can see 90% of the time that hour you were looking at your phone and your child wanted your attention. And I'm not saying that parents need breaks. Like, I get it. And it's also just, but I think that having that protected time where you're really talking with your kid, it just, I don't know if it happens, honestly. I really don't know. I would say I'm seeing it happen more because we encourage this and we model it. But I don't know, that's why I do think that it's kind of a problem, the lack of communication.
Yeah. Well, we set limits, you know, a lot of parents are set limits on their electronics. They try anyway for their kids, but full disclosure, I need to do that for myself.
I need to.
You know what I mean? Like, it's easy. Like the phone's alluring. Like, it's so easy to get into it. Yeah. But the other thing is, I don't know, like if you experience this also, but a lot of our parents have, when they're dealing with kids' behavior problems, they've kind of given up on the communication because it never goes well. Mm-hmm. And that's where strategy around communication helps, which is it matters how you talk to a kid or someone with whom you always end up in an argument with. Like, there actually are approaches that are more effective. So I don't know. Can you speak to that at all? Like, does that come up in?
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely hear what you're saying. It's hard to get from, like, you know, I am just so done with this kid yelling at me, or this kid just doing this one thing over and over again, or my teenager just having an attitude constantly or whatever. Yeah. So it's hard to shift that, like, cause it feels so negative in a way. But if you shift it to like, I'm going to gear up. I'm going to just go ahead and pack up all my, all this time I'm going to need and really make sure that emotional stuff is beyond me, because I'm going to use empathetic listening right now. And that, I think, it's hard for me to do. It's hard for me to do with my husband, you know, like if I'm upset, we work together. Mm-hmm. So we're together a lot. And I say, sometimes I just have to protect that time. And I think that that's just good communication in general, right?
What's empathetic listening? Is that like a term? Like, I kind of put those two words together, but is that a thing people say?
You know, I think it's my brother is a licensed clinical social worker, and I believe I learned it from him.
Is that a term they use? Okay.
He's so good at listening to me, and I'm just like, are you still working right now? So I think he called that empathetic listening. Is just like, it has nothing to do with you. You're just putting an empathetic hat on, and it's all about listening to that person and hearing. You know? It's hard to do.
I had a customer who, a parent, I was coach. I don't coach that much. We have a full-time coach who does it, but I will coach from time to time. And I had a parent who spent half an hour talking to me the whole, I said two words. And at the end, she goes, thank you so much. You've been so unbelievably helpful. Like having someone just sit there and listening is like extremely powerful for a parent just to say this stuff out loud that they've been holding inside that they can't say to their child. They're embarrassed or don't want to say to their spouse or their other family members who they feel might be judging them, just to have someone who like, just to sit there and absorb it, who's another person who can nod and like, and without necessarily offering, sometimes, you know, obviously we offered advice and suggestions. That's what we do. I mean, but half of it is just being listening and having someone say, put the words out loud. There's something about putting the words out loud. It comes out of your system. It's almost like these feelings and words that you have are like poison. And like by saying them, they're coming out of your body in a way that you feel better. So she was like, oh, like, thank, that was like, you've made me feel so much better. And I was like, I didn't do anything.
You know,
I mean, listening is important. The point is I did something, right?
You did. And all, but you, at the same time, so you're sitting there listening, empathetic listening, I'm sure, right? Cause you were really engaged and she felt that she was heard, and you were kind of directing her to do that in a way by just being there. And, you know, and so that's also when I do parent education, it's just like pointing in the right direction. You cannot control other people. You're not controlling other people. You're helping them control the environment or manipulate the environment to get that thrive, you know, that the fruitful learning going. But I do think that you were also allowing, you know, that was kind of a direction for that parent. And so to have that opportunity is amazing. I think I really wish all parents would do that.
Yeah. And actually if you actually get to the point where you're either making suggestions or talking about specific issues, it's often hard to even get to that. Like they need to have that release first. They need to get everything, you know, aired out first. But okay, I want to go on to another one, which we talked about before this, which is, why is there such a big focus on positivity, and shouldn't a child see that life isn't always positive? So can you elaborate on that?
I love that. Cause that's probably like, everybody's like, oh gosh, Maria, you're just always so positive. I was like, you know what? Sometimes we're inoculated to people yelling at us, like at the post office or whatever. You run into this in life. So life isn't always, you know, golden and happy. And that's why I think that parents need to see that there is that balance. There's ups and downs, and embracing that, that's a normal thing. Because I think a lot of parents, at least that I've worked with in the past, have really tried to avoid the negative stuff altogether, and even avoiding topics that are important to talk about with your kids, right? Because otherwise they're going to get that information on social media or internet or school or other people if they have these questions. So I do think it's important to have that balance, but I do think that it's better to have, you know, more positivity than negativity, obviously. And you know, with there's lots of research in psychology that points to those two homes, one that has a lot of negativity, a lot of reactivity and yelling, and the other home that has a lot of proactive things set in place. You know what's expected, and there's discussions, and they're good conversations, but there might be some negativity there too, because you're talking about hard things, or you're sad, or you're depressed, or whatever, you know. So I think that those conversations need to happen, and we also need to prepare our kids for the fact that there's going to be, like my dad always told me, you're going to get into a car accident at some point in your life. Like it's going to happen. So just know that. And I think about that, like there's going to be some, you know, issue in the future. It's not always going to be beautiful. And if people react strongly, this is outside what I thought, that, and you're not prepared, it can be really difficult to get through it. So.
I like that a lot. And especially the car thing, like, mm-hmm. My kids are now 19 and 20. And I just know that this is not being negative. This is being realistic. They have suffering ahead of them. Like you can't get through, like life is, there was a guy, do you know who, a book I read a long time, but I'm dating myself a little bit, but there was one of the first sort of pop psychology self-help books was something called The Road Less Traveled by a guy named M. Scott.
Oh, Peck. Yeah. Oh, of course.
And I've read that several times. And I read it first when I was like 20 years old. My father was a social worker and clinical psychologist. And it was in our bathroom. It was like, it was, this book was always there. And he said, you should read it. It's very readable. And I read it when I was like 19 or 20 years old. It had like a profound effect on me. And I always remember the very first sentence. The first sentence of that book is, life is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes on to that. And it's fascinating because, and it's, any readers out there, it's The Road Less Traveled. It's a great book. It's been around for 50 years now, I think. And when you read, and he talks about the practices that, and the people he worked with through his practices, which like incredible pain and suffering, people that had really, really difficult lives. And I always remember the last chapter of the book is called Grace. And after having a career in this, his impression was that wasn't that, wow, people are messed up. It's, wow, people are way more resilient than he ever could have expected, given the circumstances they've been through. And it was a pause. It was a very positive note on a book that when you read it, you're like, oh my gosh, like life is hard. Life is really hard. And then it's like, yeah, but we are like, we're resilient. Like you just have to get up the next day and try to figure things out or whatever. And he was amazed at how resilient people can be in the worst of situations. And it's actually a message of hope.
Absolutely.
Wrapped in a book about like really difficult things that, and it's the same type of things that the parents that listen to this podcast and that you work with go through, which is like, this is really painful stuff,
mm-hmm.
but we see positive outcomes. I mean, it happens. You can't imagine it when you're in it, that there's going to be a positive outcome to this, that my kid can get through this and will become a independent, thriving adult who makes it through life fairly well. Like you can't imagine that because it's just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was, you know, what we saw during the pandemic. You know, we saw this huge fear across the world, right? And then people, even though the next wave came, people were more resilient. They weren't disinfecting everything all the time. People, it happened where we are resilient. And I saw that with, you know, kids who graduated from college, what they had gone through during the pandemic, and here they are going to go out resilient human beings.
And you get that through these trials and suffering also. That's not to minimize, like you don't wish that on anyone, but it's, you grow through this. And that's actually a good point that I think that we talk about this a lot, which is you're, parents don't, none of us likes to suffer. We don't like the suffering as parents, is difficult, but we don't want our kids to suffer either. And a lot of times what they need to struggle, like they grow through the struggle. And it's very hard for parents to let their kids struggle, even though that might be the best thing for them, is to let them struggle a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I see this. I had this one kid who really wanted to drink Coca-Cola. He was screaming for that cup because the older sister had it. But he could not have it like health wise at all. And I remember the mom was crying because she was like, I want to give it to him. I said, but he can't have that. And like, let's just go ahead and put it out of his sight, and major tantrum. And I was thinking about this, like how hard that was for the parent to see her child in distress. And I get that. It's just, they have to go through that. You might be upset, but everything's going to be okay. We're going to get through it.
Now, you write, we had this question also, which is, why do some kids react more emotionally than others? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think earlier you were mentioning that, you know, some kids, you have a different approach than others. I was definitely way more emotional than my siblings. And I remember my mom saying that to me, oh, Maria, you are so sensitive. You're so emotional. And I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing. So I think the answer to that is we don't have a clue why people are more emotional than others. But I think that there is a level of reinforcement also when there's a lot of crying and hugging and crying and hugging all day, every day. That can be, you want to definitely redirect to, you don't want that, you know, have to live through that all the time. Right. So, but I do think that teaching about our emotions and again, communicating mm-hmm. about what's happening, if they have that awareness and they can self-manage better.
Were you what they call a sensitive child?
Yes.
Because there's the thing, one of my sons is clearly a sensitive. I was a sensitive child, I think. Well, my wife doesn't think I am because she thinks I'm insensitive a lot. But I was, but I technically was. Because I look at my son, who's definitely a sensitive child. Like, mm-hmm. like if we rearranged the furniture in the house, he would get really upset. Like mm-hmm. like things like that would bother him, and he's a little, I wouldn't say emotional, but just sensitive to changes and sensitive to mm-hmm. people's emotions and stuff. And actually, it has. It's hard. It's hard for kids to deal with that. But we usually took the approach that he has to recognize that that's something that he has, mm-hmm. and the world's not going to change for him. He has to learn to,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know, how to deal with that personally, rather than have expectations that, like, you know, we still moved the furniture around. we were actually nice about it. Like, you know, you have to understand that you're going to have to learn to deal with things like that.
Right.
As opposed to not ever moving the furniture around. So, but we also weren't like, yeah, you have to just deal with it. Although in a way we were just saying you have to deal with it, but we were doing it in sort of a teaching coaching way, which is you have to be able to deal with these types of changes and stuff. So
you communicated effectively. And
yeah, we tried to. Yeah.
Yeah. And I
without going overboard. I mean, sometimes you can go overboard, but we just a little more businesslike and, like, I don't know. I always took the approach of, like, the good empathetic boss, but you're still the boss.
There you go. I love it. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about, I saw a recent adult that we work with had gone through a breakup with her boyfriend, and I was literally expecting there to be a major meltdown there, and just, she moved on, no problem. And her communication was clear. Well, no, that was not a good fit. And I want to be with somebody who's a better fit, and just, like, really matter. And I couldn't, but we had worked on a lot of those skills. And I could just see, wow, I was expecting her to be super emotional. And I see the opposite too. Someone I would think would be like, I'm done with that. And then just cannot handle the breakup. You know, we see that, we work with a lot of teenagers and young adults. So we see this.
Yeah. Okay. What about, another here, a couple more, and then we're going to wrap this up. I don't want to go, we can't go too long. My podcasts are usually like 15 minutes, so we're going to go a little bit longer.
Wow.
So
okay.
What does good parenting actually look like?
Good parenting. I think it goes back to creating that environment where your child's going to thrive, and always focusing, not always, focusing on that as much as possible. And then also making sure you've taken care of yourself. You're taking yeah. care, you're getting your sleep, you're getting your nutrition, and you're modeling those things for your kids. Cause I think having that balance is really important. Then I worry about kids that don't get sleep or nutrition, that mm-hmm. those are just fundamental needs. And so I think having that balance, and then also parents just, we tend to be really hard on ourselves, yeah. you know? So I think, seeing that we're really all in this together, you know, that you have, and you have the support that you need, and hopefully, you can get that communication with your partner who's you're raising your family with.
It's, I'm glad you mentioned the sleep thing, because we homeschooled our kids from sixth grade on, mm-hmm. and people would ask, well, I remember early on people said, what's the best part about homeschooling or whatever, or what's hard about it? And I said, well, the best part is the kids sleep in every day. So, I mean, we had a time when they get up, but they didn't have to get up at 6:30 or 6 o'clock right. in the morning. We made sure they went to bed at a reasonable time, but they got up when they got up, and then we started school, and they learned mathematics on 8 to 10 hours of sleep every night. And I remember going through school being sleep deprived, and it's so hard to learn anything sleep deprived. So my kids did pretty well in math, but I think part of the reason is that they actually weren't tired when they learned it, because it's hard to learn stuff when you're tired. So being aware of those types of this very, I mean, that's a very specific thing. If everyone's sleep deprived, it's going to be hard for anything to go well.
It's an imbalance and it can be a recipe for disaster. So yeah, very important.
Okay. Here's one. How involved should parents be with their kids and teens' social lives?
Appropriately involved, more involved than you think. I think it's
so important. more rather than the less.
I think it's important for you to encourage your kids to make good friendships that have similar values, and teaching that, because it's so easy to fall into you know, this peer influence that's not positive. And so I think it's important to really know your kids' friends. Absolutely. And also monitoring social media, I think, is helpful.
Yeah, that's the other question, is what's the deal with kids and teens and social media and technology?
It comes up all
it comes up all the time.
I mean, it's I don't want to call it an addiction, because I couldn't diagnose that, but I'm just saying that it is straight up. People are picking up this behavior more and more, and it can be difficult to manage. But if you put when the kids are younger, if they have a device, they think it's really important to limit the screen time and to know exactly the sites that they're on. I see that some parents will do that, and some parents will do that for a little while and then kind of forget. And then you see the kids start searching things. It is just important to, I feel like it's coming off as like being so controlling, but it's not about that. It's just, again, providing that environment for the quality of life you want for your child and your child wants for them.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not, I mean, at best it's benign. At worst, it's not good for them. It's almost never, good for them. I mean, it's not, mm-hmm. At best it's benign. You're lucky if it's just benign. So
mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think any kid that's not on social media is missing out.
Exactly.
Overall.
Right.
There's a lot of bad stuff happens out there. Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing parents struggle with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's one of the major, things that are, and actually that and sleep deprivation, actually the two of those things are like just some very specific things that affect an awful lot of what's going on with adolescents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And structure, and I think coming back full circle to where you started, structure actually is what solves, solves isn't right, that's a strong word, is what is effective in making sure those things don't take over.
Exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, I don't push, you eat together as a family, but if you have also timed meals, you have structure with your eating and your sleep and basic structure, you sing a song while you're going to, go brush your teeth every day with the kids, like any kind of structure you can build in, it's just helpful. Kids really, they yearn for that comfort, that structure.
Yeah. Is there any other last thoughts that you want to leave with parents before
I am inspired by you and all these parents out there. And I think, parents are doing the best that they can at any moment in time. And you're making your children feel loved, and that you have their back. And that's just so important. And I appreciate parents and everything they're doing.
And so how do people find you?
So I would say you could go to info@7superpowers.com. That would be the best way.
Okay. And your book is where do we get your book?
It's on Amazon, Kindle, and the print version on Amazon.
Okay. Right. And we'll put links to all of that in the show notes of this podcast. So Maria, thank you so much for being on. You are the first guest on the Empowering Parents podcast.
So honored. Thank you, Kimball. Thank you so much.
Parents, if you like our content, please visit empoweringparents.com and sign up today for the Total Transformation Program. Total Transformation is the instruction manual for dealing with children and teenagers who are mouthy, disrespectful, or resistant to authority. In this step-by-step program, James and Janet Lehman show you how to change your child's behavior and take back control of your family with the exact techniques they used for over 30 years to get kids to behave appropriately. And when you sign up, add the parent coaching option and schedule your first coaching phone call today. Thank you for listening to the Empowering Parents podcast. Talk to you soon.